1190 AM, The Patriot, America's bi-state voice of freedom. We welcome to the show from FramingPaterno.com, a frequent friend of the show, John Ziegler. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing well, Kevin. Always good to speak to you.
As well here, you watched the Bob Costa show the other night on the NBC Sports Network after the hockey game when they did their show at a reexamination of the Free Report. I thought all was done fairly and well.
Well, yeah. I mean, in comparison to every other media outlet that's ever tackled this issue, this was a grand slam home run. Of course, there wasn't a lot of competition there for what the best show ever done on this subject was. I have to give full credit to you, Kevin. I do not believe that without you, this show would have ever happened. When you and I first met last fall at the very first Penn State game, you mentioned that you thought that Bob Costas might eventually come around on this story. I was highly skeptical of that. In fact, even scoffed at the notion that he would ever do anything significant on this because of the risk to somebody in his position. He has so much to lose, being obviously a huge celebrity, having a lot of prestige and gravitas. I don't think that he did as much as he could have, certainly, or what I would have liked him to have, but in comparison to others, he did a spectacular job, and I think he did as well as could have been expected, and that would not have happened without you giving him every opportunity to take a second look at the Free Report and actually read it for himself. And he deserves a lot of credit for essentially, although not directly, for essentially admitting that he was mistaken in his initial reaction, where he called for essentially the death penalty for Penn State. And then, in fact, he went from calling for the death penalty for Penn State based upon the Free Report to the other night saying, quote, "This doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense," which I thought was quite an interesting transition, and I think shows the progress that the people like you and I have made in trying to knock some sense into those in the media. But as you know, Kevin, unfortunately, there are not too many people in the media like Bob who are willing to listen. They don't seem to care about facts. The truth doesn't matter. They have their narrative. They're not going to revisit it. And I've actually had some hilarious escapades and interchanges with several members of the media in the last couple of days in response to the Costa show, which I hope we'll get to in a minute. But I guess to me, the big takeaway, Kevin, is, you know, the headline of the show really ought to have been Louis Free and Mark Emmert refuse to answer questions from Bob Costas? Are you kidding me? I mean, that's game, set, match. I mean, this is not answering questions from Kevin Slayton or John Ziegler. This is Bob Costas. This is as prestigious as it gets in the sports world. He obviously was not going to attack Louis Free. He was going to be more than fair. Same with Mark Emmert. And they didn't even have the courage to come on. And I guarantee you, Kevin, if the news media was remotely fair, remotely open-minded, remotely consistent, they would have destroyed Louis Free and Mark Emmert for not appearing on with Costas. And frankly, I think Costas himself should have been harsher on Free and Emmert for not showing up. I understand why he felt like he couldn't do that, but in a remotely fair world, wouldn't that be the headline of the show?
No
Free,
question.
Free and Emmert don't show up?
No question. And ESPN barely even mentions that there's a lawsuit, and it's a massive lawsuit that has now been filed in Center County up in State College, right in the backyard of Penn State. They want to act like it doesn't exist and it will just go away because there's such an incestuous relationship between ESPN and the NCAA. But without a doubt, you're right on target, John. How in the world could they not come on? That's the question. It's your handiwork, Louis Free and Mark Emmert. You're the ones who stand by it. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid that Bob Costas will ask you some fair questions and that you might have to actually answer them rather than the softball tosses that people at ESPN gave Louis Free and Mark Emmert on the days when they held their ridiculous news conferences, if you want to call them that?
Yeah, it's really quite extraordinary. I mean, and unfortunately, you see, this is where the lemmings, the jackals in the news media. See, I'm a big believer that in this fragmented media age, it's not what gets reported that matters. It's what gets repeated that rules the day. And in a normal situation, that would be what would get repeated and repeated and repeated everywhere, including on ESPN. Louis Free gets exposed as a fraud. He won't answer questions from even Bob Costas. By the way, he should have already been revealed as a fraud. Forget about all the things that you and I and others have exposed about his investigation. To me, the smoking gun of what a fraud he is when the Paterno report came out, he put out a full written statement 49 minutes right. after the Paterno report was released.
It's impossible to have read it. It's impossible.
Impossible. I mean, he didn't even try to pretend.
Right.
Well, you would think he'd wait 2 hours right. to pretend.
Right.
But he didn't even do that. And then, of course, there's the issue of so many of his other actions coming under clouds of suspicion and controversy and scandal and being discredited. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary, and I agree that ESPN is by far the worst on this, and I know that you've already gone after Lester Munson, and I actually have an interesting story to tell about him. He's the so-called legal analyst who wrote one of the most ridiculous columns, which is really hard to get into that rank in this particular story. You have to really be ridiculous to get into the higher echelon of the most ridiculous stories written about the subject. But as I understand, you've already articulated, you know, he put out a doozy. So I actually have his personal email address, his AOL personal email address, as well as his home phone number. And I have called him, left a message. Of course, he didn't respond. I also emailed him, and I explained who I am. I'm the documentary filmmaker, interviewed Jerry Sandusky for 3.5 hours in prison, discussed it on the Today Show with Matt Lauer. I was interested in your analysis of the Paterno lawsuit. As a legal analyst, you should know that Bob Costas proved that your conclusion that there was a cover-up is completely absurd and nonsensical. And so then I asked him several questions in an email. And here were some of the questions, Kevin. How do you have a cover-up without Mike McQueary? Why is he not even alleging being part of a cover-up in his lawsuit? Why is he not? Was he not given the open wide receiver's job until 3 years after the incident? Why was he not prevented from testifying by Joe Paterno, or at least told to tone his story down? Why did Joe Paterno testify in a way which actually partly backs up Mike McQueary? Why, when all the principals in this story knew that McQueary had testified almost a year before the story broke, was none of the evidence, none of those emails, destroyed? And why were they completely unprepared for what hit them when it happened? Why did Curly Schultz and Spanier not even bother to hire their own attorneys? Why have none of them flipped on each other for a plea bargain? Why, if Paterno led a cover-up which destroyed his career and life, did Curly release a statement praising his honor and integrity? This guy destroyed his life. Why would they cover up the crimes of someone who was an ex-coach who no one liked and who had disdain for Paterno? And then I concluded my email to Munson. As Bob Costas said last night, quote, it doesn't make sense. Why are you blindly accepting a theory for which there is no evidence and which makes absolutely no sense? I look forward to your explanation.
Which you'll never get.
I got zero response. And I'm going to call him again at home. I'm going to keep calling until he answers the phone. I'm going to call from every number I got.
Be the squeaky
that's
wheel.
Ridiculous. It's absurd. And by the way, I don't even think he watched the Costas show. I'm convinced he couldn't have.
I'm sure he didn't. And I don't believe he's read the Free Report. Because you'd have to be a moron to write in his column that he wrote. And when I see him, I think of this old, washed-up lawyer like Paul Newman in The Verdict, who couldn't get any cases, so he spends most of his time in the local tavern. And then ESPN comes and rescues him out of nowhere and says, hey, why don't you be our legal analyst? I mean, this guy's so frumpy, and he actually has the nerve to write, this tells me he's done no homework whatsoever, that this lawsuit does damage to the agreement between the NCAA and Rodney Erickson to replace the fear of or deference to the omnipotent football program. Now, he obviously doesn't know that no less a great authority than the NCAA itself has brought other institutions to State College to show off the Penn State football program's relationship with the academic side as the model for all NCAA signatories. And, of course, the NCAA seems to want to forget that, too. But this moron should know that that's what the NCAA used as their shining example of how to do it right. Only when they had their personal vendetta and agenda did they seem to sweep that into the closet. But this idiot doesn't even know that that happened.
No, it's remarkable. And unfortunately, this episode that I'm describing and you're describing is not outside of the norm. It is the absolute norm on this story. I have dozens of examples of where I have confronted these people politely, respectfully, and with the facts, and invariably, I mean, it's not an exception to the rule. It is the rule. They either don't respond or they respond in such an incredibly emotional and gutless fashion that it's hilarious. I got another example for you. You're going to love this one, Kevin. So there's a writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Tribune named Dijon Kovacevic, all right? And he wrote a column, I believe it was yesterday, in which he mocks Joe Paterno supporters for never engaging him whenever he brings up the issue of Joe Paterno's grand jury testimony. And he actually wrote in his column, he said, every time that I ask them about Joe Paterno's grand jury testimony, they run away and hide, and they never engage me on this. So I thought, okay, this is an open invitation, right? I'm going to take this.
And it's going to be easy.
Right, this is easy. So so I tweet him, and I say, look, you made a challenge. You say that Penn State or Paterno supporters run away from, I'm here. Come at me, big boy. I'm happy to debate you on this one. And so I happened to go away from the computer for like an hour. He eventually tweeted me back a couple times, and because I didn't respond within 2 minutes, he decides that I'm the coward and I'm not going to engage. So this, I find this hilarious. So I then tweet him back. Several tweets. I explain exactly, very politely, no, nothing profane, nothing disrespectful, nothing. I said, look, the reason why Joe Paterno's grand jury testimony is irrelevant is that Mike McQueary's initial report to Joe Paterno was later found by Tim Curley to not be accurate. And there was a reason why it wasn't accurate, because we now know that the evidence indicates that there was no sexual assault that night, and that Mike McQueary simply changed his mind on two different occasions, once after he spoke to Tim Curley, and then later on, 10 years later, when investigators told him that Sandusky was a pedophile and they needed his help, and they pressured him, and he said, oh my gosh, I must have seen a sexual assault. That's what happened here, and that's why Paterno's grand jury testimony is essentially irrelevant, not to mention that it's vague, and it may have been manipulated by the fact that McQueary refreshed Paterno's recollection just before his testimony. So I get all that into several tweets, and so I wake up, and this is hilarious. So I find out that this guy who puts out the challenge, right, says that Paterno supporters will never confront him on this issue of the grand jury testimony. I do it in an incredibly fact-based, incredible way. He blocks me on Twitter. Now, for you to block somebody on Twitter, I mean, that's like the ultimate gutless move, right?
I mean,
you have to really be a special kind of gutless, especially to block, you know, somebody who's credible on the issue like me and is being very respectful. So he blocks me. So not only does he not respond, he blocks me. So I email him. I said, you know, because I'm, as you know, Kevin, I'm relentless. And I have his email. I say, this is John Ziegler. You know, sorry, I don't monitor Twitter minute by minute in the middle of the night. I tweeted you numerous times with no response. I know more about this case than most of the people directly involved. You were very wrong about the significance of Paterno's grand jury testimony. I'd be happy to explain why if you're interested. I can assure you that I will not run away, but my guess is that, like most in the media, you will. Here was his response. Sorry, John, but you asked me if I was game to debate the topic of institutionally sanctioned serial child rape. That tells me how seriously you view this. See the blog for my thoughts, which are clearly laid out, and play your game on your own. Take care. He then, I responded, I said, what are you talking about? Institutionally sanctioned serial child rape. That's not what we're talking about at all. And he proceeded to tell me that he has put my email on his spam blocker. Are you kidding me? This is a reporter for a major newspaper.
Who's challenging you.
Who puts out a challenge mocking Paterno supporters for not being willing to debate him on this, and he not only runs away, he sprints away like Bo Jackson heading for the end zone, or like Mark Schwartz running away from me at the Penn State game. I mean, it's hilarious. You can't make this up, Kevin.
Well, and not only that, that's so bizarre, it's not even funny, but to say institutionally sanctioned child rape, where do these people get this?
Well, unfortunately, see, it all goes back to the beginning here. I mean, the original sin, if we can be serious here for just a second, because this is pretty funny stuff. You got to laugh, otherwise you cry. The original sin of all of this was when Penn State allowed the media to view their actions through the firing of Paterno and the accepting of the free report as a de facto guilty plea. That's the problem here. See, they can never get their tiny little weak, gutless brains around the concept that Penn State caved, panicked, and then covered their own ass through their actions, and that their guilty plea is meaningless and irrelevant. And then, unfortunately, see, the other element of this, and I have to blame the Paterno forces for this, see, because nobody wanted to say anything that could be remotely considered, and I know this better than anybody on the planet, remotely considered defending Jerry Sandusky by saying, wait a minute, let's take a look at what he was actually accused of, what the facts are, what really happened and what didn't happen. Because no one wanted to do that, Kevin. No one had the guts to do that. The media was able to present and paint this picture that Sandusky was like making appointments in the newspaper to rape boys. That's essentially the perception that got created, that this right. was happening on a daily basis, and that this was happening out in front of everybody, and everyone just kind of looked away and said, Jerry, good luck with that. I mean, that's the impression.
And some
of these reporters actually still believe that's what happened.
I really think they do. I mean, it's so bizarre that you could actually come to that conclusion. It just shows me that the IQ of the norm in the media today is single digits. I mean, you can't be this stupid.
It is in single digits. But it's worse than that. See, it's not just that they're stupid. It's a deadly combination of stupid, gutless, and narcissistic, and arrogant. And so, and when all of them speak in one voice, see, the irony of the media today is whenever the media all speaks with one voice on a subject, especially when it doesn't make sense, my initial reaction, Kevin, and I think yours now too, is, wait a minute, something's not right. Their initial reaction is, oh, well, we couldn't possibly all be wrong, so we must be right. Even though they were wrong about, Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds and Manti Te'o and Lance Armstrong and Tiger Woods and Duke Lacrosse. I mean, all these right. stories where they were 100% wrong.
They have a litany of being wrong.
Yeah, it doesn't impact them. They never think about that. And I think the more often, the more it's a 100%, chorus, I think there's a better chance that they're wrong, because they stop thinking about it. They stop looking at it. And that's why people like you and I were like, wait a minute, hold on a second. This doesn't not only make sense, but the facts don't back this up. And then just by the way, just to send, give you one other hilarious, the third story of media malpractice here. So, getting back to Free for a second, Stu Bykofsky is a columnist for the Daily News. He's also an old fart. I actually knew him from my days in Philadelphia. He is the guy who actually, you may recall this, asked Louis Free the softball questions. It essentially was almost written by Louis Free about how horrible the Penn State football culture is, okay? This was towards the end of the news conference. And Free flat out lied to him in his response. I mean, he either lied or showed that he didn't have a clue about the facts of the case. And I told Stu this almost immediately after the press conference. I said, Stu, you got schnookered by Free. He lied to you. He told me at that time via email or Facebook, I'm not sure which, that he didn't care. And I was like, you don't care that he lied to you? And so anyway, long story short, the other day, for some reason, he emailed me about something, and I happened to reference this. I said, Stu, I hope you watched Costas. You guys got this story wrong. Essentially, I'm just saying, why did you guys not follow up? He responds, this is a guy who's supposedly a friend. F you. F you is his response. I'm like, what? F you? Are you kidding me? He lied to you. His response to that is, I don't care if Louis Free lied. It doesn't matter. I'm like, what? It doesn't matter that Louis Free you're out. So then I post this on Facebook without using his name. I just post the, you know, what the exchange was. He gets on Facebook and it's all agitated that I've outed our conversation, even though I haven't, because I haven't used his name or even, you know, the specifics of it. And he says, John, release all our emails. So I do. I release all the emails on the Facebook page exactly as they were, exactly as he asked me to. Then he's upset that I did that. I mean, these are the people that we're dealing with here. They have no intelligence. They have no integrity. They are lazy. Oh, they don't care about the truth.
Unbelievably lazy.
And unfortunately, they're all. This is why they got into the media in the first place, because there's nothing else they can do, and because they're narcissists, and people think they're important, and that they must be. You know, they must have some influence. Well, the reality is that, you know, the other thing that's happened now is because jobs in the news media are shrinking on a daily basis, they're all so cowardly. That's the main thing that strikes me, is how cowardly they are, because no one wants to get out in front of a story, be wrong, and lose their job.
Right.
So you know, that's why, you know, only somebody like me or you can be stupid enough to have the balls to actually say, wait a minute, this just doesn't make sense. And if nothing else, Kevin, you and I have been vindicated by what Bob Costas did. I mean, no one can ever now say logically and with any kind of semblance of truth or any real substance behind it that we were blatantly wrong or that we were crazy or insane or whatever it is. Because now even Bob Costas is one of us. I mean, he won't fully admit that, but essentially, if you read between the lines, he clearly does not believe the free report conclusions. And I think that's, you know, a huge vindication for our side.
And he has even said on this show right here that if you view the free report at worst, it is an absolute disgrace to what the free report has done to Paterno's reputation, if you view it at its worst, which is how I view it, because it is so full of inaccuracies and absolutely no facts to back up any conclusions, which is, by the way, stage one of any investigation. Facts have to support the conclusions. If you have none, you have no conclusions, and any first-year law student would know that. But what I get a kick out of is, as you point out so accurately, the media is not only stupid, but they are cowardly. And when you have a Bob Costas, as you point out too, John, who it was courageous of him because of the risks he had to now change the narrative on this, Louis Free and Emmert should have been thrilled to come on there, right? Because Bob originally supported the Free Report. So why wouldn't they? And of course, he supported it not based on having read it, as he's explained time and again, was on a producer's information the moment he landed in London for the Olympics, and they needed him to give his reaction. That's the danger of media, that you do those kinds of things. However, Free and Emmert should have felt comfortable in coming on. Dick Thornburgh came on, and by the way, in my opinion, gave the appearance of the most authoritative, credible source in this story that I've seen so far.
Well, I mean, I like Dick Thornburgh. He was the governor of Pennsylvania when I grew up there. I mean, I was a fan of him then. I mean, he deserves credit for standing up now. But let's face it. I mean, you know, Dick Thornburgh doesn't know as much about this story as you or I do. I mean, you know, he just doesn't. I mean, he was reading from cards, and, you know, it's great that he's doing what he's doing. I'm not criticizing him. But unfortunately, we now live in a world where perception is reality, and celebrity and perceived gravitas is far more important than knowledge. I mean, I'm not sure that from a knowledge base that any of those three guys are necessarily the most three knowledgeable guys. And I actually thought Costas did a better job articulating how absurd the free report is from its general basic lack of logic and not making sense than any of the three Paterno representatives did. I thought Costas was outstanding there. I think he actually parroted several of the points you and I have given him. You know, I know you've spoken to him. I've spoken to him. He clearly listened very carefully. He clearly understands the lack of logic of the whole free report. And the way you attack the free report, Kevin, is that it doesn't tell a story, as Bob articulated, that makes any sense. But he has a couple of data points that make you go, okay, that's weird. That deserves some explanation. I'll give him that. But you know what that's called? Those are called leads. Those are not called conclusions.
Right.
So he has a few leads that deserve explanations.
Yeah.
I'm fully supportive of that. he can't tell a story based upon his evidence that makes any sense. I can. In fact, I'm doing that. I've written about 50,000 words that I will release at some point in some form that tells the real story of what actually happened here, consistent with all of the known facts and the way that human beings tend to behave. And it's vastly, I mean, it's 180 degrees different than what Louis Freeh is saying. Yeah. Unfortunately, you can't put it in a tweet. That's the problem.
Right. And,
you,
and that's
you can
the,
tell the other side's story in a tweet.
Yeah,
the truth you can't tell in a tweet.
And that's the attention span of most Americans today is a tweet. You know, I would disagree a little bit with you, John, on Thornberry. I thought he came across very authoritative.
No, he does.
And he had
absolutely
those cards there, but they were simply note cards. I thought he spoke very intellectually about this whole issue. However, I didn't think he spoke enough. I agree with you about the other two. They sort of bothered me because the family spokesman really had no business being on there.
Dan McGinn baffles me. I've been very disappointed with my own interaction with Dan McGinn even before the whole thing with Scott Paterno went down. I found him to be incompetent in just simply doing what he said he was going to do, getting back with messages, responding to texts, that kind of thing. I realize he's a busy guy. But Dan, let's review Dan McGinn. Dan McGinn, on his first day of the job, got his client fired after 61 years. I mean, that's not hyperbole. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Dan McGinn, on his first day of his job, managed to get Joe Paterno fired. And he still is somehow still getting a paycheck a year and a half later. I mean, that's remarkable. I mean, say even somebody in the Obama administration wouldn't be able to get away with that. I mean, that's incredible. He has done not one thing, in my opinion, that has been truly helpful to this cause. Not one. And I think he has blown numerous opportunities, and I thought he blew numerous opportunities to make a stronger case on Costas. But no one cared about what the only thing that mattered was what Costas said, because he was the new information here. He's the one with the credibility, the gravitas. He's the celebrity. He's the one taking the risk. And when he said it doesn't make sense, and when he set up the straw man arguments that are so bogus in the Freeh report, that was what was so compelling. Unfortunately, it was late at night, on a network that most Americans have never heard about. It did get repeated, but it's not going to, it's not on the NBC network. It's not in prime time. It's not being picked up really by the rest of the news media, and while the historical record will be held by this, I am skeptical as to whether or not the long-term narrative will be impacted at all. I predicted that the rest of the news media would be hands-off of Costas, that he would not get destroyed because they would rather ignore him because they fear him. They know he's got credibility and that he can fight back, and I think that's pretty much what's happened.
I think you're exactly right. I was just about getting ready to say, not only the national media is afraid of Bob because of his stature and his credibility, but his own network is. Matt Lauer and the Today Show, who had you on, but wanted to make the focus Jerry Sandusky, that you somehow support pedophilia, the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my life, mentioned not one word of the Costas show on their own frickin' network.
Yeah. And it's funny because, I'm in still contact with NBC, and I actually, from a coincidence, as you know, I actually informed you that the show was going to air, and I believe was the first person to publicly, make any sort of report that the
I wouldn't have known it without
air.
You. I
but
wouldn't have known.
That was purely by coincidence because I happened to be talking to them on another matter, and I agree. I mean, there's no question that under different circumstances, if NBC decided as a network to in a rational world, Bob would have been on the Today Show, on Wednesday morning, promoting
right.
this, right?
Right.
I mean, that would have been logical. That didn't happen because, they probably didn't think that was going to get the best ratings for that particular day. I'm trying to work on, as you know, I've talked to you about this, and I've mentioned this to Bob Costas, and he actually seemingly likes the idea, but I doubt he'll be able to nudge it along. But I'm trying to get NBC Sports Network to buy into this concept of doing a live debate called the Trial of Joe Paterno, where we have a jury determine whether or not he's actually guilty or innocent of the so-called charges against him.
Well, here's the problem with that, John.
My guess is that'll be a very difficult thing to do, largely because I think one of the biggest problems is finding an opponent that will have the guts to do it.
Well, yeah, that's number one. But number two is they'll do this for Jody Aaron. curious, day after day after day, they'll have a mock jury on HLN, but they won't do it for this.
Right, that's an interesting, that's very interesting. And I think that it all really does come down to ratings. I mean, unfortunately, outside of Pennsylvania, the media has succeeded in making this appear as if it is a dead story and that there's nothing new here, there's nothing to talk about, it's case closed, and then there's just these, you know, crazy Joe bots that won't accept reality and that are fighting for nothing and have no case.
I think the way to sell that is to somehow insinuate that there is a sexy model that was somehow involved in Joe Paterno's life, and we're going to get to the bottom of it.
I am thinking about trying to see if I can get Kim Kardashian to do the other side.
There you go.
Of the,
case closed.
Of and then we probably wouldn't, you know, we probably could do this on prime time, 8 o'clock on a Thursday night.
On every network.
I'm not joking about this, by the way. I mean, this is a very serious proposal, and one that I think would be a heck of an idea, and
I think
certainly
it'd be sensational.
You know, would be easy to pull off. But I just think that unfortunately, we just live, and I'm not going to give up on it. In fact, I'm actually pursuing other options in case NBC Sports Network does not buy into it. But I think it's one of the worst things about the media today is that it is completely driven, completely, by what they think is in their own agenda from a ratings perspective, their own prestige, what's safe, you know, what's not going to get them in trouble, what's going to not get them, you know, potentially to lose their job if it goes badly. There's just no courage. It's so all gutlessness. And, the truth cannot win in that environment. Just cannot win in that environment. There was a reason why, the journalists of a past age understood that there had to be a wall between the economics and the business side of media and news, because they're inherently incompatible, inherently. And now, unfortunately, we've seen a perfect storm, Kevin, where because of the economics changing and because of fragmentation and now because entities that used to be money-making machines are now struggling to make a profit, and at the very same time, technology has allowed for overnight television ratings and instantaneous internet traffic reports. Now they have all the information they need to be able to go, see, this is what we want, this is what we need. Jody Arias is it. And it has devastating impact. I mean, look what, it's off the topic, but even Fox News Channel cut away from the Benghazi hearings. A poor guy put his career on the line to tell the truth about Benghazi, and Fox News Channel even cut away to go to Jody Arias's.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And to further what you just said, and then we've got to run here because we're running out of time, John, but to further what you just said is that had the CBS News Division shared that same thought 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when 60 Minutes debuted, it would have been knocked off the air after a month.
Oh, yeah.
Because it got no ratings, it made no money, and yet they believed in the journalistic side of it, and that's why people like Mike Wallace and all of the folks that made CBS, and not only their news division, Walter Cronkite, Eric Severide, all of them, and of course Morty Schaefer and all the original 60 Minutes guys, knew that they were onto something journalistically important, and yet it's still popular today, which stuns me that they have not looked into this Louis Freeh report at Penn State. I cannot believe an operation like 60 Minutes has no interest in this. It blows me away.
Well, unfortunately, you're right, but unfortunately, there are many things that have blown me away in this entire scenario, and it's sad. It's entertaining if you try to take the most mentally healthy outlook on it, because otherwise it'll drive you insane. But I do think it's emblematic of so many problems we have in our culture and our media, and that's why I'm on this, and that's why I'm so glad you stayed on it. We were vindicated this week. Kevin, you deserve a lot of credit for keeping Bob on it. I hope he won't leave the story, because if he does, I think we're in big trouble. We'll see what happens next. It's going to be interesting. Never dull.
No, it won't be. And I don't think he will leave it, John. And he even in his opening remarks left the invitation outstanding for Free and Emmert. So we'll see if they ever take him up on it. But they won't. They're too spineless. I said they should have just issued a statement and said, "I'm sorry, we're both feeling ill. We both have lost our spine."
As if they ever had one.
All right, John, great stuff.
RavenPaterno.com. I'll write something up on the stories I just told you, and have a great weekend.
All right, John, thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's John Ziegler from FramingPaterno.com. We've got to run to the news, and then we're coming right back. We'll have open lines for you on the Cardinals, Boggs, Matheny, blech, and, of course, the Paterno story. Back after this.
NBC's Jim McLeshevsky. We're keeping you up to the minute first with NBC News next on 1190 KTVU.